With the NFL draft less than a week away, the Green Bay Packers are ready to add new players to the roster. But who are the players with red flags they should be concerned about? We'll ask Dane Brugler of CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Packers fans, welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for the NFL draft. And to do that, we have a guest joining us on the phone today.
Expert interview.
We have Dane Brugler of CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com. Mr. Brugler, how you doing today?
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. We're glad to have you on the show. And as a theme for today's show, we're going to talk about players with red flags entering the NFL draft, which starts next Thursday. And Dane, I want to start with a guy who kind of is pretty high profile, Robert Kemdichie. He was not only arrested, there are also concerns about his on-field production, that it doesn't match talent. Do you see him falling out of the first round?
I'd say there's probably a better than 50% chance that he's going to fall out of the first round, be available in that early second. Kemdichie is one of the top 10 talents in this class. He's just not one of the top 10 football players. And it's easy to see the flashes when you watch him on film. The body control, the movement skills, easy change of direction to skirt blockers. He has the initial power to put blockers on skates. He can be a difference maker, but it only comes in spurts. And he even admitted that he needs to eliminate the lazy tendencies. And, you know, obviously that alone is a red flag. And scouting is about the tape, not the box score. But with only 7 sacks and 34 starts, I think that backs up the streaky play that you see on tape. And so that's not even touching on the off-field issues. And so I think he's a true wild card. Maybe a team takes a chance on him late first round, but I think it's more likely we see him in the early second.
Another player who's kind of falls into that same category in that, you know, that I think a lot of people project him late first round, maybe early second. Noah Spence of Eastern Kentucky. Does his pass rush potential overcome the off-field concerns that have been well documented by now?
Yeah, Spence is a tough case. He's the best pure pass rusher in this class. But he also has some limitations versus the run, and then, of course, his drug history. But I don't remember a case like this because I've done a lot of homework in talking to past coaches, teammates, other people in his life, from high school to Ohio State, Eastern Kentucky, and everyone has told me how they still believe in him as a person, how great his character is, how it was a one mistake that he got caught up in, a string of bad decisions. And to Spence's credit, he could have bolted for the NFL after the Big Ten declared him ineligible, but he transferred down to the FCS level, and he told coaches, hey, drug test me every week. And they did, and Spence passed every time. So is he a risk? Sure. Anytime a player with a history of drug addiction, you have to consider him a risk. But at some point in the first round, I think that pass rush potential is worth the risk. When you talk to Noah and you find out more about him, the fact that he stayed clean for over a year, I do believe he is worth a risk at some point in the first round.
Let's move on to Jalen Smith, the inside linebacker from Notre Dame, and a little bit of a hypothetical here. If teams were assured that Smith was able to come back and play by 2017, does that alone still drop him out of first-round consideration?
Well, I think the issue is the injury. If it was a clean injury, a clean ACL tear, like Todd Gurley had, tore his ACL last November, or November of 2014, but he still went top 10 in the 2015 draft just months later because it was a clean tear, and teams felt confident that if even if he wasn't ready for the season opener, he would be ready early in his career, and he was. And so far, so good for the Rams and Todd Gurley. But with Jalen Smith, I think it's a much different situation, obviously. If he was a clean injury, then Jalen Smith still has a chance to go first round, still has a chance to be a high pick, an early round pick. But teams just aren't very confident that he's going to be able to be the same player. Some teams don't think he'll ever play again. And in situations like this, teams have to trust the medical staffs. And you hate it for Smith. Started every game of his career, all 39 games, just happened to get hurt in that final game. But the reports from doctors, they're just not good. Some teams are hopeful he can play again, and maybe he can return to that old form. But it's a lot of maybes, a lot of, kind of hopeful thinking. So a lot of question marks. My guess is we'll see Smith drafted, but it's going to be somewhere, on day three. And it's anyone's guess where he ends up.
Another linebacker here. We're talking about a guy that probably won't reach the Green Bay Packers, but Miles Jack, another guy with injury concerns. Are those concerns going to drop him at all in the NFL draft?
Jack's really interesting because I've talked with numerous teams who are very concerned about the knee. And when I hear similar details from different teams, that's when I know it's not, BS. It's not pre-draft rumors or, teams trying to sabotage a player hoping he falls to them. I mean, this is a real concern. And other reports have backed it up. Adam Schefter has said he thinks Jack falls out of the top 10. Some think around the league that he could fall to the end of the first round. Bottom line, I have no clue where Miles Jack is going to wind up because I don't know how all 32 teams view that knee. I do know how several teams feel, and they won't be drafting Jack, two of those teams being in the top 10. They're concerned about the longevity of the knee. He might be okay for 10 games, but, after that, doctors just can't say. A type of player that, might be able to get through his first contract, but might not see that second contract. And where is the value for a player who, based on talent, is a top five pick? But when you factor in the knee, how comfortable can you be when you're talking about a first-round player, a first-round pick, and investing that type of pick into a player? So the doctors are worried, I really am hopeful because, like I said, Jack's one of the top 3 to 5 players in this draft. It's really a shame, but hopefully the doctors are wrong and he plays for a long time.
I'm also interested in learning a little bit more about another inside type of linebacker, Antonio Morrison of Florida. Obviously not as highly touted as Miles Jack and Jalen Smith, but with Morrison, is there hope he'll still be able to improve, or is he permanently damaged goods?
And it's always tough when you have these conversations because, you're hopeful for the player, but looking back at his medical history, it's Morrison's another tough case because he's such a competitor, and I don't want to count him out. But suffering serious injuries to both knees, including a miraculous return from his past injury, the Florida strength and conditioning coaches they said they'd never seen anything like it before, that Morrison was able to rebound from that type of injury so quickly. He's not an elite size speed specimen. And I think that clearly he's not the same athlete post injury, but he sees plays unfold quickly and he attacks. And so I think the injury history will probably take him off some boards around the league, but all it takes is one team to give him a chance. And he's the type of player that I don't want to count out because the competitive nature, that aggressiveness that he brings to the field, I want to give that a chance. So I think somewhere on day three, I think he's worth taking a chance on.
We're talking to Dane Brugler of CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com here at Railbird Central on a Friday morning. Moving to the offensive side of the football here, do you think Tyler Higbee becomes a situation similar to Lyle Collins from last year where teams pass him entirely in the NFL draft? Or do you think teams might see what a player like Collins was able to offer and take that risk?
Well, the teams are doing a lot of work on Higbee's recent arrest to find out more details, more information. And I think it's much different than Collins, especially considering the severity of the incident compared to Collins. And I think that's the big difference there. I do think the arrest will probably knock him down a round or two. You know, he's a top 100 talent. So I don't think it's going to be a free fall situation where he falls out of the draft completely. But like I said, teams are doing a lot of research, a lot of homework to find out more about the incident. There are a lot of teams that are interested in Tyler Higbee. And so there are some teams that are, you know, really hoping that this incident hurts him so they can get him in the fifth or sixth round and get a great value with a player like that. And when you're talking Tyler Higbee, you also have to include his knee issue. And so those red flags are something that are probably going to knock him out of the top 100 where his talent suggests. But again, there are a few teams that are hoping he's still available fifth, sixth round, so they can end up getting a great value there.
Another off-the-field concern, Mississippi State quarterback Dak Prescott. How much did his off-season DUI impact his draft stock?
You know, honestly, I don't think it's going to hurt him much. And you know, with these character things, we have to treat each player individually and not paint a broad brush. And I think Prescott is a perfect example because he's built up so much goodwill with NFL teams that I don't think this will hurt him much. I think it'll be looked at as an isolated mistake, an isolated incident. His leadership, his intangibles throughout his career in college are fantastic. The way his coaches speak about him, I think the DUI will not define him as a prospect. I still think we're going to see Dak Prescott come off the board somewhere in the third round.
One last question about Laquon Treadwell, the Ole Miss wide receiver, and his injury history. How much do you think his severe injury has impacted his speed and whether he'll be able to get faster the longer he's removed from injury? Because he's not considered a burner right now.
Right. And, you know, I don't think that was ever really Laquon's game. I don't think the injury has affected him that much where he's going to get much faster. I think he's at 100% speed right now. You know, he's just a high 4.5s, low 4.6s type of athlete. And that might push him down draft boards for some. But in my opinion, he's still the top receiver in this draft. When you scout Laquon Treadwell, you see everything that makes him so dominant on film. And speed isn't one of those reasons why he is. And he wins with ball skills, catch radius, his physicality to the catch point. And he's only 20 years old. He's still growing and you know, becoming even more powerful. So Laquon Treadwell, to me, you know, he might not be an ideal fit for every offense with what they're looking for at the receiver position. But to me, he's the top receiver this year and a guy that I would not hesitate to use a first-round pick on.
Dane, you're a wealth of knowledge. Before we let you go, how can people get your draft guide?
Easiest way, check out my Twitter, at DP Brugler. I have it pinned at the top. It's a link. It's an automatic PDF download. It's under $7, 450 players, player reports. The feedback so far has been awesome. So really appreciate everyone checking it out.
Thanks a lot. We'll send people there. Dane, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Enjoy the draft next week.
You too. Anytime. Thanks, Brian.
All right. Take care. Dane Brugler of CBS Sports and NFLDraftScout.com and his own NFL draft guide joining us here at Railbird Central on a Friday morning. Thanks to him for joining us. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us. And by all means, folks, do several things. Follow him on Twitter, first of all, DP Brugler. Go get his draft guide, second of all. I got a copy myself. I think it is the top draft guide out there. There's lots of good ones, including the one put out by Cheesehead TV and many other outlets out there. But I do think Brugler's comes at the very top. It's so in-depth that even, you know, the undrafted free agents the Packers signed, you'll be able to read up on them, get into their background, things like that. It's really, really good stuff. But let's continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
Oh, Packers news over the past 48 hours or so since our last episode of Railbird Central. Contract details have been released for a couple newly signed players, them being linebacker Laurenti McCray and offensive lineman Don Barclay. I know details were reported by Tom Silverstein in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. That's where, you know, I think I saw it first, but yeah, many other outlets have reported similar findings here. McCray got a one-year, $800,000 deal that included a signing bonus of $50,000 and a workout bonus of $75,000. So all told there, that's $125,000 in bonuses before he even plays in a game, assuming the Packers don't cut McCray anytime soon, and I don't think that's in the plan, seeing as they just signed him. Otherwise, the base salary he received was the league minimum of $675,000, but got a little boost with the bonuses there. Don Barclay, meanwhile, received a one-year $700,000 salary that included a very small $25,000 signing bonus. And more interesting here, his deal also reportedly includes a split salary of $405,000, meaning that's all the Packers would have to pay him. So they'd pay him a lower rate if he ends up landing on injured reserve. So kind of protects the organization a little bit. As you can see, Don Barclay probably wasn't in a whole lot of negotiating, didn't have a whole lot of negotiating leverage. Was able to get a small signing salary that I'm sure was nice, but, you know, compared to other players on the roster and across the NFL, not really all that big of a signing bonus. Doesn't cost the Packers all that much. They're now $10.65 million under the cap. All it did was push down a few players in the top 51, so... Packers end up spending, the money against the cap is only about $500,000 more than what it was before they signed them. So not really all that much, but those are the details just released recently. Speaking of Laurenti McCray, and I failed to mention this on our last episode of Railbird Central, and I had planned to address it and then never got into it, but... I wanted to address it now, I guess, in terms of, you know, obviously this is not a high profile. I mean, it's a notable signing, just not a high profile one. You know, you're talking about a guy who is the fifth outside linebacker on the Denver Broncos roster the past season or two. So not a guy who's, you know, got a lot of playing time at all. So he played a little bit there at Denver and contributed to a Super Bowl victory and should be very proud of that. But if we're looking at how he fits into the Packers roster, you're probably looking at the same thing. You're looking at a number four or number five outside linebacker. And basically, last year, that was Andy Mulumba. He was the number five outside linebacker on the team. But here's the difference. I think this move, the Packers looking to improve their roster because, you know, obviously, you know, the contributions of both players on defense are probably similar, right? Laurenti McCray didn't play much in Denver, a little bit. Andy Mulumba didn't play much in Green Bay, played a little bit. That's it. But the difference being where the improvement comes, Laurenti McCray is a core special teams player. Andy Mulumba rarely, if ever, played special teams for the Green Bay Packers. Despite being an outside linebacker, despite, you know, kind of that's what you want. I mean, you want your special teamers to be made up of linebackers. I mean, you want defensive backs and guys like that who are fast out there too, but you can understand. I mean, they can't all be defensive backs. You might need some linebackers out there too, other players from other positions. But, you know, that's what McCray offers, is he can be a core special teams player. And that's what Mulumba wasn't able to offer, other than maybe the rare snap or, you know, something like that. He just apparently didn't have the speed for it. And McCray does. So that's the upgrade here. If you're a fifth outside linebacker on the roster, and I don't want to pigeonhole or peg McCray into that role yet. I mean, certainly you want to give him the opportunity to climb up the depth chart if he deserves it. It's going to be tough, you know, getting playing time over guys like Julius Peppers, Clay Matthews, Nick Perry, Jayron Elliott. So, in addition to any rookies the Packers might add. But, like I said, if they're going to keep a fifth outside linebacker, McRae offers some special team value that a guy like Andy Mulumba didn't, and obviously that's why the Packers let him go. I still thought the Packers could have kept Mulumba to compete for a job just because he would have had like a minimum salary. I don't think it would have hurt, seeing as you can always cut him later. But anyway, it's the direction they went, and not a big deal regardless. I would have operated differently, but not, this is not the type of thing that's going to significantly or drastically impact the organization. In other news, Ted Thompson held his annual pre-draft press conference this past Wednesday. He discussed the additions of Laurenti McRae and Jared Cook, the tight end, for the first time, you know, the first time Thompson's talked about him, although he didn't reveal anything new. And the same could be said about his comments on the NFL draft, in which he said the Packers, the goal is to take the best player available. Nothing earth-shattering there. Kind of, you know, kind of left the door open in terms of, you know, are there times where you draft for need, and if players they believe are similar, you know, could they go for, you know, he left the door open to that. But, you know, Ted Thompson not revealing a whole lot there. So not a whole lot more I'm going to get into regarding that, at least. But he talked, he met the media. Ted Thompson was his usual self, and drumming up a little bit of interest for the NFL draft that is now less than a week away. So the Packers going to have some new players on the roster. By the time we're holding this episode of Railbird Central next week, we'll be talking about some new players in the green and gold, and presumably the best player available, who the Packers will add. It's interesting. I think there was a time, and I would see it on social media all the time, people saying, well, Reggie Ragland isn't going to drop to the Green Bay Packers. Just watching they had the mock draft special on ESPN last night, Mel Kiper and Todd McShay kind of doing a first-round mock draft, and sure enough, there was Reggie Ragland dropping to the Green Bay Packers. Whether that's going to happen on draft day, I have no clue. I mean, mock drafts are, they're not accurate. Nobody's is. So, you know, whether he drops or even whether the Packers would take him if he was there, you know, considering who else would be on the board, it's tough to say right now. So, but just interesting that, you know, it's, as far as mock drafts go, one of the most high profile of the bunch with Kiper and McKay at ESPN, that Ragland does drop to the Green Bay Packers in their little exercise on Thursday night, televised on ESPN. But so there you go. For what it's worth, we'll find out if it actually plays out that way in less than a week. But continuing on with the show.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this weekend, you know, it's the calm before the storm here. Not a whole lot happening in terms of the Green Bay Packers right now, right this moment. I mean, they're kind of continuing their off-season workout program here. But interesting, over the weekend, wide receiver Jared Aberderis will be one of the guest coaches for Saturday's Wisconsin Badgers football spring game. That, according to Benjamin Wargel of scout.com. That's where I saw it first, at least. I don't know if it's been reported other places or not. But there you go. A member of the Green Bay Packers on the sidelines for a spring game. You know, spring games in college football, they're not too, you know, they're not too, you don't care who wins and loses. So nothing too, you know, I don't think Jared Aberderis will be making any major decisions here that's going to impact anyone. Just a figurehead, more or less. But if you're interested in seeing a Packers player on the sidelines, you'll be able to catch Jared Aberderis on the Big Ten Network. I think you can listen to the game nationwide on Sirius XM, or even in person if you prefer. I don't think the spring game will be sold out, so if you want to come down to Camp Randall Stadium in Madison and see Jared Aberderis for yourself, that option is available to you as well. But there you go. There's your Packers connection over the weekend and the immediate future here. But that's about it until the NFL draft. Like I said, the calm before the storm. There's not going to be a whole lot of Packers news going on in the next couple days before that happens. But once that happens, once next Thursday comes, we'll have more than enough to talk about and speculate about and analyze and dig in depth about the new players on the Packers roster, and I'm excited to do that. So waiting for next Thursday night to come when the first round happens. You got the second and third rounds on Friday night, the fourth through seventh rounds over the weekend on Saturday, and then after that, all the undrafted free agent signings that they finalize. So pretty much, you know, it takes almost 4 days plus to get through all the additions the Packers are going to make, and even takes months after that as they sign the occasional player here and there. So lots to talk about in the upcoming days and weeks here. That'll be really, really fun. But that'll do it for today's episode. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. Thank you to Dean Brugler of CBS Sports for joining us for an interview. The Real Bird Central airs Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. The live edition of the show, podcasted and on demand later in the day. My call to action is always, as usual, if you've not done so already, we greatly appreciate it if you gave us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. This show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. So if you do us a solid, just go to iTunes, search Cheese. It'll pop right up. Give us a rating and ideally a 5-star review. But we're not demanding that by any means. We'd greatly appreciate it because it helps to people find it and listen to a great Packers podcast like you're doing right now. But we'll see you, folks. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Going to have an NFL draft prospect join us on the show. You'll find out who on Monday. But we'll see you later, folks. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you then. I leave you today with a song called, if I can find it here, Cannon in the Heavens by Lotus on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack Co.
To the mattress is a cannibal about it, devouring you average motherfuckers like a panther does a rabbit, does a cabbage. I'm a beast, a mammoth, I'm a freak, a savage, I'm an abnormality. Ain't no matter down it, I'm a Venus.